Hi, welcome to the Dan Bradbury podcast, where turnover is vanity, profit is sanity, and cash is king. In this podcast, I'll bring you resources, tips, interviews, and lots more to help to grow your business and make it less dependent on you.
Hey guys, Dan Bradbury here, and I'm coming to you with one of my favorite episodes. We do this about once per quarter. That's real life success stories from business owners in the trenches. That's business owners like you who are breaking records. In this episode, we've got five business owners who are presenting at my most recent Success Mastermind event, and they all broke records. For example, one doubled revenue and profit, one 10x their profit, and one had their most profitable quarter in 10 plus years in business. Three of them are B2B businesses, two are direct to consumer, then the property market, education space, professional services, health and fitness, and more. Some are based in the UK, some serve clients internationally. The point is, whatever sector you're in, there is stuff in this episode that you can apply. If you like this episode and you'd like to find out more about our mastermind meeting and you'd like to try it out, you can be invited. We're inviting a handful of guests to our next Success Mastermind meeting in December. To find out more, go on over to danbradbury.com/December. That's danbradbury.com/December. And with that said, let's get on with the show.
So with that said, please give a warm round of applause for Mike Beck and Ian Redding. And now Ian's heading towards the door. For those who don't know, Mike, tell us about TUS. Tell us about the business that you guys are in.
Yeah. So, we've got one trading business. We're about to launch another one that are sort of intertwined. I'll explain. So, the current business that's been in operation for about 9 years is Trade Underfloor, which is a supplier. We design and supply underfloor heating systems for new and existing homes. We're a trade supplier, so we supply to heating installers, which is predominantly plumbing and heating businesses. We are launching another business, which is going to focus on installation, which will target property developers and homeowners, and we'll be utilising our existing customer base on the supply business to do that around the UK. So, hence the crossover between the two.
Good. And give context. So, Ian, how and when did you join the business?
Hi, I joined the business in February, previously working 16 years in international education. Joined business in February, I could say. My background is product sales, so basically shipping goods around the world. And that's where Mike was looking to expand the business and bring a bit more focus on sales and commercial. So, yeah, I joined Mike in February.
Brilliant. And so the reason these guys are up here today is, correct me, Mike, if I misspeak, but when we looked at their numbers side by side, Naomi, trending over time, prior to this year, they'd never had a quarter of gross profit above 100,000. And this year, every single quarter's gross profit has been above 100,000. And I think, or certainly the last couple of years that I looked at, this quarter in terms of net profit or operating profit has been the most profitable quarter, profitable quarter that the business has had. So with that context, I'm sure Ian's just going to say, well, clearly he is the solution. You know, he was hired and record. What's caused that shift that is not only significant, but seems to be consistently trending upwards over time?
Okay, so there's a few factors. I mean, we've been working on increasing profitability for the last sort of year, 2 years probably.
So what does that mean? How do you do that?
Well, a number of factors. I mean, we put our prices up going back start of last year. We'd been operating at margins of probably about 25%, between 25 and 30 for a while. So, you know, it takes a while for that to filter through. Most significantly recently, so this quarter, we've increased gross profit by about 12% through one single significant change, and that's to our model. So when we supply a system, it's usually made up of maybe a dozen components, which historically we've bought from one supplier at almost a fixed price, and we've drop shipped effectively from them. And we've done that for years and it's worked well. We've been lean as a business. But with Ian coming on board and his background in product and logistics and that sort of thing, we've actually moved, we actually did it in June. We moved to a third-party logistics setup, which basically means we now buy in the stock ourselves. So we're buying the components from different suppliers in the UK, some from overseas, stocking them in a warehouse, and the company fulfills that delivery for us.
So let me just pause you back there. And for those who are in the room that aren't product-based businesses, you might go, this doesn't apply to me. But I think it could in the context of Mike and Ian took on a significant business model shift. Because at the service, it almost appeared to be contradictory. You kind of go, okay, to buy in stock yourself, then you're taking the risk and you're carrying the stock. Whereas before, they were drop shipping straight from the person they purchased from, and they made their margin and it ran lean. So I'd be curious to know, what made you believe it was going to be profitable, and then how did you mitigate those risks? More profitable. Yeah.
Because we can negotiate better deals on the products, essentially. So, you know, if we were buying component X from our existing supplier and that was almost at a fixed price, we knew we could go out and buy those in bulk at a far cheaper price, but we were kind of beholden to that supplier if we're buying everything else from them and they were distributing it. So, you know, we negotiated deals with different suppliers, and it worked out that we could get margin of around 45% on a system versus 35%. The big deal, I guess, or the big thing with it is that we had to invest significant amount of cash in the initial stock to do it. And we've seen an increase in this quarter, but actually we won't feel the full effect of it probably for maybe another quarter or maybe into 2022, because we've still got some customers who are buying the old product, a bit slow to transition across to the new ones.
Got it.
But the upshot is, you know, we'll be 10 to 15% better off gross profit margin. So we're talking about the lifetime value yesterday. It means one of our, you know, a key account for us is someone who spends £100,000. That adds another 10 to 15 grand gross profit.
Yes, and by the way, if it adds to the gross profit and your overheads doesn't change, where does that money go? It goes straight to the bottom line. And so if you're comfortable sharing, what was historically your gross profit margin, and then as a result of these changes, where is it, or where do you think it's going to settle as you fully transition?
Well, if I go back 2 years, it was probably in the region of 27%. Last year, we've been improving that without any real significant changes, just tweaks, probably to 30 to 35. But as I say, next year, we'll be looking at 45 plus. So
if over a few years it's gone from 27 and it settles at 45, you're talking more than a 50% increase in the profits, in the gross profit, right? In real terms, which is like astonishing, dramatic impact on the bottom line.
And also what's been interesting is that in our market, as in most industries, prices of raw material costs and supplier increases have been, you know, numerous this year. So we've actually been able to change our system or our product offering and offer our customers a saving at a time when prices have been going up as well, while still, you know, getting a far better margin for us. We've been able to offer them 10% saving. So, like Ian's keen now to really drive the volume through that because, I don't know if you want to talk about that in a bit more detail.
The other thing Mark was saying is the risk. So when you're beholden on one supplier, your main supplier, you've got an external risk there, which is if their service drops, if their supply chain supply chain dropped, so does yours, and we were experiencing poor service from them, which then knock on effect towards that we couldn't handle or we couldn't change. So by making the change also is we kind of got rid of that external risk and brought it in-house to manage it, and something we could control. As Mike said, we've put about 12% onto the gross margin, giving the customer about 10% saving off a different system. So again, the marketing message is, you know, everyone else is putting the prices up, we're either holding or saving you. So we're giving you another option to buy with us. But the best thing is it's all fast moving lines. So the stock doesn't stay in the warehouse too long. We work on about a 6-week rotation of stock, which then if we're pushing an extra 10 or 12% out of it, then it's obviously become self-funding. So big upfront cost, but then we can kind of self-fund it as it goes through. So that's the main one that we don't really want stock sat on the shelves. So my sole goal with the sales team is just to drive volume through that. And the benefit of having a 3PL is there fixed to man, you know, to upscale, upman if the demand increases. So if we can keep driving the volume through that cost, then that's a positive. Position to be in.
I love that. I need to be speedy or we're running out of time. But what I like about this specifically is that what many would see as a risk or external, you're going to got all the supply cost increases, etc. You know, market much more, you could perceive it as being more vulnerable. And then they did the calculations and chose to take the leap of investing the cash to transition to the model, which you've also heard suggest not only is it creating spectacular profitable results now, but they actually see it further transition, so it's going to improve. It's going to improve for some time to come, which is astonishing. So first of all, give a round of applause for Mike and Ian. Before we let Mike escape, any questions? Yep, go for Alistair. So we've got one, maybe two questions, and then we'll have to switch to the next.
Massive well, guys, because someone who's in the same sort of line where I've seen all my prices go up.
I realise you're going to ask them a question and they're not going to have a mic. So I'm going to point this at you, Alistair, and give this one back to them.
Thank you. Don't know what that does to me. So all our prices have gone up and delays on materials. So you've bucked all the trends. So I'm impressed how you've done that. But you must have also grown your volumes already. So how have you managed to get more sales out in your one line? You're adding the second business into it. So have you grown sales from your existing already?
Yeah, so forget the new installation business. That's not actually trading yet. We've had about 30-35% year-on-year increase in sales. Partly because we had a month and a half of COVID that we, you know, had a downturn on last year. Attribute everything to Ian, but he's done a good job in terms of restructuring the sales team and their focus. So, you know, ultimately for me, that was the reason Ian came in, was to manage and develop the sales team. That's his background, where I'm not experienced. So we changed the roles of our sales people in terms of what they were doing, and focused our more experienced guy on certain customer types. And played to the strengths of our salespeople. So we had a bit of a change, but interesting, we didn't spend a penny on advertising from January to August this year. One of my areas of focus from last year going into this year was all of the data that we'd acquired through ad campaigns and stuff last year. I was conscious that I don't think we'd maximized the potential of all of those. So we spent the first couple of quarters, you know, on existing customers, focusing on existing customers, getting, you know, upsell opportunities, lots and lots of things, getting stuck into them in more detail, really. Again, Ian could probably speak about that for longer, but I don't think we've got that long. But organic growth from existing customer base, really, and focusing on that rather than going out and finding lots of new stuff.
I love that. Anything to add to that, Ian, before we wrap up?
Quickly. It was restructuring the sales team. It was trying to, the lifetime expect the understanding what the average order value is for a customer and where to target you guys to then increase that average order value or go out and find out more of those customers that are spending that level rather than it just seeing at a top level what your margins are per, you know, versus your costs. Right? We get down into the detail and understand what's profitable and what's not and then double down on what is and align your resources to maximising it.
I like it very much. Record breaking quarter. Give it up for Mike and Ian. Okay, next up, we're going to go to Zoom. And we're going to go to Sonia Gill. So, Sonia, hello, welcome back. We meet again on the panel. So, Sonia, for those that don't know about Heads Up, tell us about your business and what it does.
Yeah, so we help head teachers and school leaders make their schools genuinely outstanding. And they're four times more likely to achieve that if they work with us than the average.
Fantastic. And brilliant quarter. And forgive me, I've not got the numbers in front of me. I refreshed it, my memory, before we started the session. It's jumped right out. Tell us how, so I don't remember the specifics. Tell us how was your quarter? I think I'm correct. Compared to a year ago, it was literally double the revenue, I think, from memory, and more than double in terms of profit from the same quarter a year ago. So give us a bit of context. What have been the root causes that have created this significant uptick?
Yeah, so we redesigned our product offer, and that makes it sound like we had a coherent product offer to start with. We kind of did lots of things. And what we did was we kind of simplified our product offering to be this one-year model with very much a target of getting 10 schools onto the program each school term.
So what was it before, for context, Anya? What was it, and then before you tell us what you changed to? What were they buying?
Before stuff, things we were good at. No, it was a little bit more comprehensive than that. But we kind of had a couple of programs, but we'd change them up, we'd mix them around, depending on where the school was. And we did good work, but what we were able to do when the pandemic happened was to go, right, which programs are schools doing that get the best results? So, you know, we do training on difficult conversations, we do training on, you know, things to help create a high-performing culture, we'd really help them get their cultural ecosystem in place, things like that. But when we stepped back and went, what actually works? We went, oh, okay, it's this program, that's a one-year program, let's just do what we know works.
Very good. So then how did you do that? Because if there's somebody in this room going, well, we sell a lot of products, and if they were trying to replicate the strategy that you followed, you've kind of simplified and doubled down in the one that you felt was strongest. How did you make that transition, and were there any bumps on the way?
10 years of bumps, probably another 10. I mean, I think for many of us, the pandemic allowed that moment to pause. And in my mind, it's something that's really, you know, we get that benefit from coming to Mastermind, but it's something to keep trying to come back to. So I think probably the key thing we did was to actually just look at, we knew which schools were getting results. And so we could revert, we kind of look back on that and go, what are they doing? What programs are having the biggest effect? Because we know that certain ones, they're good and they'll have a small effect, but they weren't creating the impact schools becoming outstanding that we wanted. I'll be honest though, even when we simplified it and we thought we'd simplified it, we hadn't simplified it as much as we realized we could. So we ended up having 2 one-year programs. Now we've come back down several months later to 1 one-year program. So even at the initial simplification, it still wasn't as simple as it could be. And I guess it's what you always say, Dan, these things are iterative processes. I haven't got like a magic kind of, we did this one thing. Apart from the analysis is what really led to it and made us realise. I think probably alongside that, I was looking at the model and thinking, this is just too bitty. There are too many moving parts. It's hard to understand even when you're the one who essentially created it bit by bit, let alone explain it to other people. So there's just this real need of, we need to make this simpler. We need to make it work more systematically and more effectively, not just internally, but for our clients.
And so if, just to put you on the spot, if you were able to go back in time and speak to the you before you had you made this decision, or perhaps even earlier when you had, when you first designed it with more complex processes and offerings, what do you think is the lesson? Could you try and kind of summarize, what do you think the key takeaway is that you would have advised the younger version of you to go, right, no, we need to go in with this simpler model?
I think there's probably two parts to that answer. So one, in a way, I needed the messy process because that helped us understand what worked and what didn't. So there's almost like a research phase, if you like. But I think once I kind of moved away from it being me as the main, because we deliver training, once we started to move away from that being predominantly me and started to expand out, actually, all I was doing was multiplying what I was doing. I wasn't stepping back and saying, okay, how does this work better if we're going to grow, if others are going to do it? So it was literally kind of cloning all my sole trader processes into a business. And that was really inefficient and messy for everyone involved.
Interesting. And what have been some of the benefits? Because, I mean, obviously, with the financial results being so significantly greater, I mean, you'll tell me if it's not, but it's probably fair to attribute at least some of that progress for the financial benefit. But what have been some of the other benefits that have come as a result of simplifying the model?
Yeah, I think it's allowed us to take that simplification further. So it was great hearing, you know, Alexis talking about Air Manual yesterday, because a year ago, I'd be thinking, we've got so many processes, it's so all over the place that you can't even see how to wrestle them into shape. Whereas now it's things like we've all got termly plans, which makes it easier for every member of the team to kind of go, right, what do I need to be doing? It means that we can just work smarter. So instead of trainers kind of bouncing around from lots of different training and doing a great job, they can have, you know, straight runs of training, do a better job, come up with a million ideas on how to improve it even further. So we're just able to operate at every level better. Also, it's really simplified our sales pipeline. Because again, we had many multiple ways you could come and find us and meet us. And actually, we're able to do a better job of helping our customers understand what we do, how we can help, and if we're a match for each other or not. So, it stemmed out from there.
And just before I hand it over to the audience, if they've got any questions, what does the future look like? Because I'm always interested in when we choose the people to be on these panels. First of all, if you want to be on one of these panels in the future, the first thing is you need to complete your review. You know who you are, those that didn't complete a review, but you need to complete the damn review. Anyway, off my soapbox. But I'm also curious to make sure, is it sustainable, Alison? I.e., it's not a blip, you know, or we got a big break, we won a big contract. Is this significant, i.e., more than doubling of profit and the doubling of revenue, is it sustainable or is it a blip? What does the future look like, Sonia?
I've got to be careful because my accountant's on this call at the moment. So he's going to be going, look, Sonia, I know your numbers and have you watched your August monthly report? Yes, predominantly yes. So we've mapped it out. We do have a few things, like when we run events, they give us an increase. But we're trying to set up for the next few years to kind of rinse and repeat, get our processes really sorted out so that we know that we can do certain actions. We're going to meet this many clients, this many are going to come on board. We're going to deliver to that level and to get that working really well. So I think it is sustainable because we're looking to take on 10 schools every term. We've done that. In fact, these numbers don't even show that consistently for three terms because we had one, then we had five, then we had 10. So now we're kind of on the 10, 10, 10 P. So it should be at least sustainable, if not improvable. Doesn't mean it's guaranteed, obviously, but the model's there, the numbers are there, the budget's worked out. We can see at what point we need to get new trainers in because that improves our profit margin from freelancers, but freelancers are great as well. So we've kind of got all those things mapped out because it's all about doing it as well.
I love it. So first of all, before we go to the audience for a question or two, give it up for Sonia Gill. So, questions, thoughts, comments. So, there's somebody that's doubled revenue, more than doubled profit in a sustainable way and simplified the business in the process. What questions do you have? Jill.
Congratulations, Sonia. It's fantastic to hear that. Just curious about the simplification thing and what impact did that have on your marketing, the messages you were putting out? And just curious about that.
Yeah. And Jill, one day we will get that catch up.
Yes, of course. Need a coffee.
Yes, that would be nice, in person maybe. It's not made a massive difference in our marketing yet. It's something we want to come to, but we're trying to kind of only bite so much off at a time. You know, it's like we get really excited, don't we, with our businesses. We want to do everything. So what it's actually done for us is it means that internally we only need to focus on so many marketing messages and so many marketing activities, but we haven't changed those messages that much yet because we're working with Lisa's team. So we're setting up kind of our sales pipeline, our processes there, and we want to get those numbers and then make a change and see the difference on the numbers, then make a change. Whereas before we've kind of just gone, we've made a change. Do we think it was better or not? And it's been very anecdotal. So as of yet, it just means that we've got less variety of marketing going on. We're doing fewer things, but trying to do them better and then increasingly better. Does that answer it?
Thank you.
Love it. Thank you. Thank you. Good question. Any final questions for Sonia? Yes. Actually, I'm not going to run all the way there. Josh, could you pass that back to Ash, please? Go ahead, Ash.
Hi, Sonia. Congratulations.
Thank you. Hi, Ash.
Hi. So I was just interested in, so 10, you're moving up to 10 clients per quarter. So you're now having to sort of increase the team, look at bringing, additional operational costs. Just interested how you're either already managing that or planning to balance that out as you increase sales.
Good question.
Yeah, actually, we're not increasing the size of the team. So the size of the team we had, they can cope with this volume now. Does that make sense? So it's kind of like, it's just more a reorganization than a growth. So we're not really increasing the costs at the moment. And when we are, it's for growth or other benefits. I think Jodie had a question on the chat box that you might not have seen.
Oh, I didn't. So Jodie, jump in and ask the question, Jodie.
Thanks, Sonia. And Dan, it's less of a question and more of a kind of reinforcement because myself and Sonia have had a number of conversations and Sonia's absolutely inspired me to do something very similar in my own business. And just as Sonia was talking about her own journey there, it was really reminding me that we have this kind of nervousness and anxiousness when we strip back and we simplify and we feel like we need to do all of the things. And, you know, because somebody asks us to do something and we can do it because we're intelligent people that we should do it. And actually what I've seen in Sonia's own business and what I'm starting to see in my own is when it's much like actually niching in a market where you want to serve everybody, but you should really be an inch wide and a mile deep. It's the exact same for our businesses. And so I think what Sonia's doing is amazing. And actually, almost to respond to Ash as well, but Sonia doesn't need more people and it's not a more complex operating system. It's actually a simplified operating system, which has freed her up, which is why there's so much more profit. So it's ridiculous how win-win-win-win it is. So the more we can kind of look for that simplification in our models, I think we get our well-being and our lives back. So anyway, I'm a champion and inspired by Sonia and hoping to do the same thing.
Very nice. Thank you, Jodie. Right, give it up for Sonia Gill. Okay, next up, it's been his best quarter in business, in 10 years in business. Give it up for Mr. Derek Mason. There you are, sir. So, first of all, for those that might not know, Derek, tell us briefly about what Superstructure Associates does.
Superstructure Associates is the multi-award-winning structural engineering consultancy that started 10 years ago. In simple terms, an architect makes a building look good, but we make it stand up. I had the honour of leading the team that did the independent engineering check of London 2012 Olympic Stadium, and I published a book on it aptly titled, Will It Stand Up?
So thanks, Derek. So Derek, it was alluded to yesterday a little bit because you were talking about your running and you know, the business has been through a bit of a rough time in the last 12 months. I mean, for context, and I'll let you be as precise or not as you wish to be with regards to revenues, profitability, et cetera. But the same quarter a year ago, you were profitable, but the quarter surrounding it, you made a loss. This quarter, so a year on, it's 10x the profit, and it's been your best quarter in 10 years in business. So what, big broad question first, what would you say are the key drivers that have created this shift from being in a relatively perilous situation to bouncing back? Is it purely, for example, or not, just COVID took us out and now it's bounced back regardless, or did you make some shifts that you can attribute the change towards?
Several things, like always, it's never just one thing. Obviously, in June, I was literally ready to chuck it all in. I just had enough. I was burnt out. I was basically stuffed. I wasn't running anything like that. And to me, running is part of me. It's my lifeblood. I've been doing it for 40-odd years. It gives me time to think, get clarity. And I just wasn't doing it. And the number one thing, recommendation, was get running. And obviously, I did that. I'd love to say it's just running, because then you could all just run and you'd all be successful. But I think it was also focus as well. You know, I had three things to focus on. Was number one was running. Number two was getting my mindset right. And I had some help from one of our other master members, Faye. She helped me with that. And then it was really, you know, looking after my team, because I think we all have this problem as business owners. We got to be the bright and cheerful and the energy, even though we feel absolutely shit, you know, some days. And so it was looking after my team and getting them more involved and more focused. And, you know, we also got a bit more commercial. And it's always these small things, you know. With construction, there's often a lot of changes, and particularly now with shortage of material, sometimes we'll do a design and then the builder will start building and say, well, he can't get these size choice. Can he do another size? So what we do is we'll sort of do the first little change for free. But in that email, we'll say to the client, any further changes we will charge for. And I've been getting my senior engineers to take control of this. And that's been adding to the bottom line because, you know, with us, we work on a fixed fee. But by saying that, when there's another change, and it's normally a couple of hundred quid here, a couple of hundred quid there, but if you put that over 20, 30 projects, all of a sudden it starts adding up. So it's that kind of attention to detail as well. Also, raising our prices where we can. I've learned to be quite good at, let's say, taking advantage, but sometimes we'll be very good at solving difficult problems. And we get a reputation for that. And then clients will come to us, they'll have another engineer who would have done something, and quite frankly, he stuffed up something. Now, obviously, they're quite desperate because they've got a builder on site and time is money. So it's more economical for them to pay us additional fees to get it done quickly. And I've got the team and the experience and the ability to do that. So we do that quick at a premium.
So there's something, Derek, in your business, which I think applies to a lot of businesses in here, which is, I know in some of your private mastermind meetings, we discussed how there is a significant discrepancy between different customers in terms of the money that they spend with you. So how do you look at that? How did that feed into your marketing or adjust how you go after different types of customers?
Well, again, I think we've been focusing particularly, well, over this year, but particularly the last 3 months, on our ideal client much more. So you're focusing your efforts on your ideal clients, and our win rate has gone up, which has shown that. And obviously profitability goes up with that because we can charge the higher fees for that. So again, it's about trying to be laser focused more than scattergun approach. You know, and I think the process of looking for a salesperson that we in the end didn't get actually made me look back at the sales process. What are we doing? How are we doing it? How can we improve it? So again, it's all these little things that have added up over this last 3 months to make it successful.
And another thing that I'm sure resonates with a lot of people in this room and on Zoom, because many of us here are trying to expand, grow, and looking to take on board people about that. The job market is tight. I mean, you wouldn't have thought, 18 months into a global pandemic, you would have thought we'd be in the opposite situation with, record-breaking unemployment, not record-breaking job vacancies. So, and obviously, some of your work is very specialised. So the job market's very tight and tough. How have you How have you managed to solve that problem, i.e. get the quality of engineers and volume of engineers you need in order to do the job?
Well, I mean, what people may not be aware of, we actually lost two engineers during the pandemic last year for personal reasons. One left because he had personal issues. I offered to put him on furlough. He said, no, I need 6 months to a year to sort his life out. So he left. So I replaced him with another engineer. And then another engineer decided to get married and moved to, ironically, Coventry. And I said, well, the commute to Twickenham is not going to be ideal. And I replaced him with a young Polish engineer, lady engineer, that came over from Poland to London during the pandemic to start her engineering career, which I thought was quite brave. And I always hire on attitude more than technical ability, because I can teach technical ability, but I can't teach attitude. Mm. And she has proven to be a real diamond. She's Polish, very hardworking, very keen to learn, so grateful for the job. And she's, you know, she just had a 1 year anniversary now, and she got a very good bonus.
Fantastic. And finally, before I hand it over for any questions the audience might have, Derek, what does the future look like now? Because again, in the recent past, and thank you for your transparency, you know, you felt like chucking the towel in, because it all felt like very, very hard work. And now it looks like you've turned a corner. Is it sustainable? What does the future look like now?
I think it's getting better. I think as everyone involved in construction industry will know, it's very up and down. Material supply is a big problem, and that could go either way. Either the rails could come off, or specialist areas could soar, you know, and we've got certain areas where we're very good, very specialised in, and we're doing well in those areas. It looks good in the sense that we've now decided we're going to look for a more senior engineer, one between me and my other two senior engineers, because we find we're winning bigger, more complex projects. My senior engineers are overloaded. I don't want to be any more overloaded than I am, so we're going to take him on. He can run some of the bigger projects, but also help with the sales. So he'll, instead of getting a salesperson, we'll get a technical person that's used to sales as well. Help me with the sales, which hopefully I can have a bit more time off.
Fantastic. I love it. First of all, give a round of applause for Derek Mason. Okay. Some great, great shifts there from a quite a difficult position to a comparatively strong position. Any questions, thoughts? Comments for Derek. What would you like to know? Anything on the recruiting side? You good? All right, you handled it well, Derek. You covered the major points. Oh, one question. Go ahead, Layton.
I don't actually have a question. I just want to say well done. Like, everything you said there was like so logical in terms of, you know, charging for the things it should be charging for. So I'm like, oh yeah, upsells. Yeah, I should be making sure I maximise upsells. I wrote down there, how can I maximise product sales? Because obviously we sell products, and like, look at my system of that and the extra places that isn't your standard product where you can charge and make more margin and profit. So yeah, very good. Thank you.
Well, we do that because now we specialize in temporary works, which often a lot of people don't realize we do. And then we'll get a project and they'll say, oh, I've got to get temporary works. Oh, we can do that for you. So it's a very quick upsell. You know, we've got other products that we can feed in once we've won the main project.
Fantastic. I like it. Give it up for Derek Mason. Okay. Okay, I confession to make. I kind of dropped the ball. I'm going to throw somebody under the bus, so to speak, in that they're going to come before we go to the fourth business that we said was on the panel, which is Matt and Jill. I'm going to put somebody on the hot seat that doesn't even know they're there because I dropped the ball and missed their review. So then we said, oh, we'll give them an honourable mention and just kind of, but that feels not reflective of what I believe to be a record quarter, at least from a revenue perspective, and certainly right up there from a profit perspective as well. So please give a warm round of applause, Mr. Josh Ryler. I figured it's better to ask forgiveness than permission.
Permission, yeah. That's what I tell my daughter a lot.
So Josh, tell us briefly about your business. What do you do?
Hi, guys. So my name's Josh, and I own a private personal training studio in Leicester, which specialise in helping people aged 40 to 60 with weight loss and improving their fitness.
I love it. And looking at your figures now and just reviewing it, it would appear to me, and correct me if I'm misreading for the several years going back into 2019 that I can see, it appears that this quarter is record-breaking from a revenue perspective. Not record-breaking, but second most profitable quarter on record that I can see at least, and the highest cash balance that you've ever had. Is that right?
Yeah.
Good. Good man. So tell us a bit more. What? Because a lot of people, and for those that don't know, I've also got investments in the health and fitness space. It's an industry which some industries have boomed, some industries have been absolutely hammered, and the fitness industry or gyms and fitness businesses particularly, where people show up in person, is in the latter camp typically. Loads of people going out of business, and yet you seem to have not only weathered the storm but come out of it stronger. What's happened, and what are some of the kind of key drivers by your judgment?
There's loads of things that have obviously happened over the past 18 months. I think the first thing that we did, like going into the pandemic, was attending like your like emergency cash flow webinars that you were putting on, and it was like just mapping out what would the best case, worst case, and most probable case scenario, what would that look like with regards to cash flow. So doing that and then just negotiating down all the expenses and stuff like that right at the beginning immediately allowed me to kind of like forecast to lose, say, like 20-30% of my revenue, but still maintain like cash flow neutral, if that makes sense. So we did that. So it's like, okay, we're going to be okay. But then we did loads of stuff to just maintain the revenue. So we're able to kind of like maintain the revenue. We had slight drop-offs and stuff like that.
How did you pivot, actually? So a good example, because your business model was fundamentally a face-to-face business model. Yeah. And it now appears we're different and people are now able to reattend in person, etc. But for an extended period of time, you couldn't see clients face-to-face. So how did you cope with that?
Yes, so we were closed for... Prior to reopening, say like from March 2021 this year, for the 12 months prior, we were closed for 10 of those months. So we obviously had to try and work out how to maintain that level of personal service that you'd get by default just from seeing your clients face to face two or three times. We had to even translate that to like an online virtual model. So it was like, yeah.
Right, and it made even worse. I'm just remembering now where you are in the country.
Yeah, so like when everybody else reopened last year in like July time, because of this weird thing that was happening in Leicester where my gym was, it was like we just had to close. We stayed closed for like another 3 months after everybody else reopened.
I don't know if you remember the spikes. We've had so many things since then, but that was an area where, oh, that's a hot spot, the spike. So special things only in Leicester.
Yeah.
The rest of the country was exempted that one particular point in time. And so everyone's opening back up and the government came and give Josh a swift kick to the soft bits when he was down, you know?
I was so pissed because like where I lived, you could go to the gym, which is like 10-minute drive from where my gym is. It just so happened that there was a weird boundary where like where my business was couldn't open. You couldn't go to the gym or anything like that, but you could go to a pub, but like they kept, you know, they opened like all the bars and stuff. Anyway, we won't get into that, but yeah. So we were suppressed. And I think like just fast forwarding just for time purposes, like the reason why I'm starting to see like bigger increases in revenue, profit, cash is because I think we were kind of suppressed for a certain amount of time where like you had external market conditions and like restrictions, which were just suppressing your ability to trade. So a lot of like the habits and actions that I do now, I've been doing for a significant period of time. It's just they weren't given the ability to kind of flourish and like manifest into reality in terms of financially because of everything else that was going on, like the restrictions, namely, I'd say.
I love it. Phenomenal. So, well, first of all, let me get this in the right order. We've got to be we're pretty tight on time. Well, first of all, I'll give Josh Ryler a round of applause.
Thank you.
Record-breaking quarter and bounce back. Any questions, thoughts, comments for Josh? I know the fitness businesses in the room have been all been huddled together sharing strategies anyway, so we might be good. All right, we're good. So give me another round of applause. Thanks, Josh.
That's all we've got time for this week, guys. If you want to find out more about this, go to danbradbury.com/December and find out the information about our upcoming Success Mastermind meeting, including a very, very special guest who is speaking at this meeting, who is the youngest person ever to list their business on the London Stock Exchange, age 29. And she's also the first ambassador for entrepreneurship for the United Nations. Find out more at danbradbury.com/December.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. Three things you need to do now. Number one, make sure you subscribe to this podcast so you do not miss an episode. Also, get on over to Amazon to get a copy of my latest book, Turnover is Vanity, Profit is Sanity, 9.5 Steps to Improving Your Profits and Cash Flow. Also, join our Facebook group, the Turnover is Vanity, Profit is Sanity community, to connect with other business owners.